You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball. Join Andy and Patrick weekly as they bring you up to date on all things Ute.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ute Talk. It is November 4th. This is episode 18. My name is Andy. I hope you all are doing well. I'm joined by my co-host and writer for Torn by Sports Network, Patrick. How are we doing, Patrick?
Doing great.
Good, good, good. So thank you, everybody, for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to us, thank you for tuning in. Ute Talk Podcast is part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. And we produce this weekly for your enjoyment, so please add us to your RSS feed and iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google, all that stuff. You can also follow us on Twitter at Ute Talk Podcast. So Patrick and I had missed Monday. Grant, Brian, and Joseph had done an episode on Wednesday, so here we are on Friday, getting to our Ute news. Let's jump right into it, Patrick. So, Running Utes had a closed scrimmage a couple weeks ago versus Texas A&M. Word on the street is that Kyle Kuzma was one of the best players on the floor. If you're a Utah fan, that is good news to hear, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not really surprising. I think he's going to take it to the next level and be the leader of the team this year.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, we've talked about it in recent episodes with, a lot of the new faces on the team. This would be Coach K's greatest coaching job yet if he can get this group rallied around each other, buying into the process, and back into the NCAA tourney, which I think is by all means possible.
Yeah, and I mean, I think with Kuzma, I do think he's an NBA guy. I think he's going to get drafted here. I don't know if he'll leave after this season, or I know he's a junior. Mm-hmm. He'll be a senior next year, so hopefully he's sticked around. But with him leading the way, and some of the guys that they have that transferred in, I think they're going to make some noise there in the Pac-12. I think they're, once they gel, they're going to be a pretty good team.
Yeah, we got a pretty favorable non-conference schedule, which is nice. Gives them a chance to get their feet wet, gel together, build some chemistry. And until we hit that Pac-12 slate starting in January, we should go into that with a pretty good record, I would think. So we'll see what he can do. Looking forward to the season, season ticket holder. So I will definitely be enjoying it from my seats. Next on the Ute news, and this happened on Wednesday, two transfers, Kendall Huey, who is a defensive end, and Tavares Williams, who is a cornerback. Both had transferred from the program. What do you got news-wise on that, Patrick?
Yeah, for those who aren't familiar, I mean, Kendall Huey, defensive end, he had a really good spring, kind of like Marcel Manalo. He had a really good spring, but just struggled to really crack the depth chart there in fall camp and during the season and get playing time. But, it's kind of crazy to me that these young defensive ends want to transfer out of here when there's going to be spots open next season. But, it's best of luck to him. Yeah, and Tavares Williams, he's just had some trouble with injuries, I believe, and I know he's injured all last season. And I think he is, if I read correctly, he's going to probably take a medical retirement and give up the game. So best of luck to him as well.
Yeah, Williams suffered a season-ending injury in the home opener in 2015 against Michigan. So hope, wish the best to both those guys. They got to make the best decisions for them. And Whittingham, will say that we will we'll work with the guys that are here, So moving on, and I know Grant and Joseph and Brian talked about this a little bit, but the playoff rankings, they came out on Tuesday evening, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, they came out. And, you know, a lot of teams that you expect in there, you know, Alabama number one, Clemson two, Michigan three. Shocker for me, and I think kind of the rest of the nation, minus those back east, was Texas A&M at number four with a 7-1 record. And then you've got Washington at number five with an 8-0 record. To me, that was a little surprising. I think Washington has played, maybe they haven't played, you know, the teams that we thought they would, you know, in Stanford and Oregon. They're not who we thought we are. Reference there, I guess, Denny Green and Kyle Whittingham. Actually, he came off with that on Monday. So, but Utah ranks in number 16. So, kind of all across the board, AP poll, coaches poll, and in the playoff poll, Utah comes in at 16. So they went up one spot. Very rarely does that happen. You move up one spot after a loss. Now, granted, it was against Washington, the number four or five team of the country, depending on what poll you look at. But, I mean, Utah had its chances, and we'll dive into that here shortly. But what do you think about the rankings, Patrick? I mean, do you think kind of fair for everybody that is ranked where they are, or are there some question marks to you?
Yeah, I was surprised by Texas A&M as well. I mean, Alabama, of course, you expect them to be in there.
Sure.
Michigan, you know, Clemson. Yeah, I expected Washington to be there, but, you know, maybe because the Pac-12's kind of having a down year, or maybe because Washington's not really one of those brand names like, you know, USC or Oregon or Stanford or whatnot. Maybe that's why they got left out. But I think Washington deserves to be there. They're undefeated. You know, they beat Stanford. Mm-hmm. They beat Oregon, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat a really good Utah team who was their toughest test to date. And
definitely.
I do believe they deserve to be there, you know, with the Pac-12 having kind of a down year, some would say, and you know, some of the top teams are down at the bottom that are usually at the top, and then you know, you have Colorado and Utah and Washington State, and the teams that you know aren't really, you know, the name brands having the good seasons. It's, you know, it's interesting to see, but you know, I was definitely surprised by Texas A&M. As far as the Utes moving up a spot, you know, rightfully so, they deserve that respect. They're 7-2, you know, they shouldn't have lost to Cal, but they took Washington to the limits and, mm-hmm. you know, the number four team in the country, and they pushed them to their limits, and, you know, they deserve to be right there at, you know, 15, 16, because they could, they're a couple ways from being, a couple plays away from being undefeated.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean. That's a whole nother podcast, I feel like, talking about the what-ifs and, you know, the 1-2 plays that kind of went against us. While you're talking there, I was looking at the schedule for Texas A&M. Prairie View Panthers. Where is that, would you say?
maybe somewhere.
Right?
In the Midwest, probably.
Yeah. So, Texas A&M, I mean, if you're going to compare scheduling to Washington, who's undefeated, you've got, I mean, Texas A&M, UCLA, they're, you know, not who we thought they were. Prairie View, Auburn, Arkansas, South Carolina, Tennessee. They lost against Alabama, and then they beat New Mexico State. So, I mean, really, I look at that schedule, and it's not very, besides Alabama, really, none of those teams are all that great. Alabama and Tennessee. I mean, Washington, even then with Washington, you've got, you know, Rutgers, Idaho, Portland State, Arizona, Stanford, Oregon, Oregon State, Utah. And in my opinion, I feel like Pac-12 has a lot more. What's the word I'm looking for? I guess from kind of top of the league to middle of the league, really any of those guys could be top. You know, they're all about kind of equal playing field. you know, some might have more talents in other positions and things like that. But, you know, you look at the SEC where Texas A&M is, you know, really you've got kind of the top dogs in Alabama and then everybody else, you know. And so I feel like there's a lot more competition in the Pac-12. Obviously, we have 9 conference games compared to SEC, who has 8. I don't know. I feel like Washington got snubbed there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I do think they should be, and especially since they're undefeated. I mean, I think it's so, you know, stupid when these 1 and 2 loss teams get ranked above these undefeated teams. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, if you're undefeated, you should be up there, you know, towards the top, not behind people, you know, who have 1, 2 losses. So, and who knew, you know, when you look at Washington's schedule, everyone expected Stanford to be really good this season.
Yep.
Everyone, you know, expects Oregon to be good. Nobody expected those two teams to be down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and you could even throw Arizona in there, even though, you know, a lot of people weren't expecting a lot out of them this season. They usually filled a pretty good team, but, you know, I definitely think Washington should be above Texas A&M.
Yeah. So for the first college football playoff rankings, Pac-12 teams, 4 of them in there, you've got Washington number 5, Colorado number 15, Utah number 16, and then Washington State number 25. It's kind of cool to see, you know, Washington and their rival of Washington State for the Apple Cup, and then Utah and our rival for the Rocky Mountain Rumble, or the Rumble in the Rockies, or whatever you want to call it, of Colorado. So kind of interesting there.
Yeah, hopefully both Utah and Colorado can finish out the next couple games with wins, and, you know, both of them be ranked, you know, maybe, you know, 12 to 15 range, and just make that, you know, Dayton in Boulder a lot more interesting, and make, you know, maybe get the rivalry going, actually.
Exactly. Yep. That's definitely what I hope for, too, is to see what that game holds in store. I mean, if, you know, they both win out, that game's going to mean a lot to either team, you know?
Yeah, it's going to basically be who comes out of the South.
Yep, who comes out of the South and who potentially goes to the Rose Bowl. So that is it for our Ute news. So let's move right along here to Washington. Quite an interesting game. I was there in my usual seats. The atmosphere was unreal. It was crazy good atmosphere. Loud, energetic. The fans were totally into it. It was a lot of fun. You know, hard to sit down. You know, Washington came out and really punched Utah right in the mouth. 14-0, you know, 7 points in the first quarter, 7 more in the second quarter before Utah started making its way back. Utah scored 10 there in that first half in the second quarter. So what are your thoughts? You know, let's break it down here. You know, first quarter, Washington goes down and gets a 10-yard run by Myles Gaskin. What were your thoughts there on Myles and his day running the ball?
Yeah, I mean, Myles Gaskin, I mean, he had a great day. He had, I believe, 19 carries for 151 yards and 1 touchdown. And on, you know, the drive, one of those drives, Utes just couldn't tackle him. Mm-hmm. He was spin moves, doing everything possible, and the Utes just couldn't bring him down. And, you know, he had a great game, and I expected that from him. But, you know, I thought maybe the Utes would be able to hold him more, you know, 80, 90 yards, but just wasn't happening. For some reason, you know, the Utes continue to struggle, especially at the linebacker position. They continue to struggle with their tackling, and it, you know, eventually, you know, that's going to end up hurting you. And against Washington, it definitely did.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you look at Washington and, you know, I mean, really the first couple drives, both offensively and defensively, were really controlling the Utes. You know, I mean, the cornerbacks were just phenomenal for Washington. Like, there were like zero passing lanes, and any time that Troy found one, it seemed like Washington closed the gap quite quickly and would get a tip or near interception. I mean, there's one play where I don't remember what corner it was, but almost had a one-handed interception, and I mean, they were just all over our receivers, legally, you know, all over the receivers. You know, I didn't see really many hold calls that weren't that were missed or anything like that, but man, they were a really aggressive and just athletic defense.
Yeah, Washington's defense looked great. And they definitely have one of the best defensive backfields in the country with, I mean, those two safeties that they have, Buda Baker. He's an amazing athlete. But yeah, the receivers, the Utah's receivers, they just couldn't get open. I know, you know, as the game went on, Tim Patrick started getting, you know, open. And I think a lot of that's due to, you know, Troy Williams. I think the first half he was just too hyped, or I don't know what, but he just wasn't playing like a,
definitely had some jitters, it seemed.
Yeah,
like.
He didn't look calm. He didn't look cool. He didn't look collected. He just kind of looked like he was too hyped that first half, trying to make too much happen. But once he came out in the second half, he started making those throws that, you know, we all know he can make. And,
yeah,
you know, he did make some great throws there in the second half. I mean, that, you know, touchdown to Evan Moyai was amazing.
It was.
Totally threaded the needle there, and a great catch by Moyai. You know, he found Wilson, COC Wilson, in the end zone as well. And then Tim Patrick made some great catches. So I think the second half, the Utah offense, you know, really came out and played a lot better. And I think a lot of that was due to Troy Williams kind of calming down at halftime and, you know, going back to, you know, just being his cool self.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that second quarter, you know, we had the initial touchdown by Joe Williams. And then just before half, Utah had gotten the ball back and rushed down the field. And quite the special teams play there, you know, with the special teams unit, the kicking unit running onto the field to kick that field goal. Literally, you know, at 1 second, you know, Phillips gets the field goal off, 29-yarder. You know, Utah was out of timeouts, and I believe Troy Williams, if I remember that one correctly, he had ran the ball a little bit forward instead of just throwing it away to stop the clock. But he ran the ball a little bit, gets tackled, and it's kind of a mad dash scramble. And I think, you know, it felt like a lot of Ute fans were pretty ticked off that we weren't able to capitalize on a short field. But it was nice to get those 3 points. So great job by the field goal unit there to rush onto the field. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, there's like, you know, it would have been nice for these to capitalize on that drive. But, you know, it was great to have Andy run out there quick as possible. I think there's like 4 seconds left. The clock was winding down, and they were able to get that off and get some points on the board. And then, of course, they got the ball to start the second half as well. So
yeah,
put them in a good position.
Yep. Yeah, so starting that second half, so you just go down, and COC Wilson gets a 6-yard touchdown pass from Williams. Washington comes back right down the field and gets a John Ross touchdown pass. And that was quite the acrobatic grab by Ross. You know, the ball was tipped as he initially caught it, starts partially getting tackled or falling down, and grabs the ball as he's going down, ends up getting the touchdown. So good on John Ross. That was, you know, tough break for the Utes. You know, you really wish to have that one back or get the ball tipped down to the ground, not up where he can grab it. So that was kind of an unfortunate, you know, deflating play there.
Yeah, and I mean, Washington's receivers were, you know, they're John Ross is good as advertised. He's a great wide receiver, can make some good plays. So, you know, Utes defensive backs didn't play too bad though. They held, you know, Washington's receivers in check for pretty much most of the game. I mean, Ross only had like 48 yards. I know he had 2 touchdowns. So, but overall, I mean, Jake Browning only had 186 yards passing. So, you know, defensive backs did a lot better than, you know, I thought they did were
going to be. Yeah, absolutely. And I'll break down the stats here momentarily. Let's talk for a minute. Final play, well, I guess game-winning play. Utah gets pinned on about their 2-yard line. Has, you know, literally goes nowhere. You know, Washington's defense just suffocates them down there. We're tied 24-24. Wisnowski punts the ball deep in his own end zone. Punts it away. Dante Pettis gets the ball. Missed tackle initially. And Pettis breaks free for what eventually is the game-winning touchdown. You know, the national broadcast, Fox Sports, you know, pointed out that there were 3 blocks in the back. And, you know, I don't like to speculate and, you know, blame things on the refs. Utah still had a chance to come through and tie that game. Utah still had, you know, a chance to score a touchdown instead of a field goal in that second quarter. You know, Utah had its chances to win, but it's tough when the game-winning touchdown, even though still Utah still had a chance to tie it after that, it's tough when the game-winning touchdown is such a blown call by the officials. And maybe you don't agree with me on that. Maybe, you know, you think it wasn't blocks in the back, but you know, for my, I didn't see it initially, watching the game. I was just so frustrated that we couldn't tackle the guy, but watching the replay when I got home and, you know, just the breakdown of that play. Yeah. There were, I mean, my opinion, 3 missed blocks in the back.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you watch the replay, I mean, there's 3 blatant blocks in the back. I don't know how the refs missed all 3 of them.
Yeah.
But they did. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. Is that the reason why the Utes lost the game? You know, that was the game winner. But, you know, that all could have been prevented by, of course, tackling. Mm-hmm. Utes seem to have struggles with tackling lately. But, you know, yeah, I totally agree. 3 blatant blocks in the back. Can't believe the refs missed all 3. I mean, the one on Wisnowski was, I mean, that was
probably the most obvious one.
Yeah, if you couldn't see that one, then the refs must have been blind. But, you know, it happens in games, and that's what happens when you leave it in the refs' hands. They're, you know, it's just like a fight. You know, if you leave it in the judge's hands, you're either going to win or lose. You just got to go out there and, you know, finish. You got to finish the teams while you can, and the Utes just couldn't do that.
Yeah. That's what I should have been for Halloween, a blind Pac-12 ref. Next year, guys, next year. So, yeah, I mean, frustrating play. You move on. There's about 3.5 minutes left after that play. Washington goes up 31-24. And Utah, you know, their drive is essentially the final drive of the game. I believe the first or second play was a false start.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't win games like that.
Yeah, their false starts. I mean,
at home nonetheless.
Yeah, they're killing them this season on false starts. I mean, there's a couple drives there, or 2 or 3 drives there, where they get down to the 1-yard line and then they get a false start. And
yeah,
it just, I don't know what's up with all the false starts, but hopefully they can get them fixed.
Yeah, they definitely need to get that fixed. I know Whittingham came out and said that they're practicing on the simulating the snap and the stemming, you know, for the defensive line making quick shifts to try and get that line issue figured out. But back to the final plays for Utah. So Utah's marching down the field, penalty here, penalty there, moving right along, starting to get, you know, within range, you know, and some real questionable play calling.
Yeah.
I mean, Damari Simpkins suddenly out of nowhere, you know, decides, you know, oh, hey, we're going to have Damari throw a pass. I don't know if that was the right situation for that play call. Maybe earlier in the game it would have been, but kind of your final drive, I don't know. Maybe that's A-Rod being creative. You know, I don't know how you feel on that one, but the play calling to me in the final four set of downs was very questionable. You know, the final play of the game, the Hail Mary, you know, I felt like, you know, there could have been an underneath receiver, you know, somebody coming back. I don't know, but we didn't even really have a chance because Troy threw it out of the back of the end zone. At least give your players a chance. And so, I mean, that's bad on Troy for a bad pass. But again, the play calling.
Yeah, I agree. The play calling on that drive and even the clock management on that drive was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, the Utes had three timeouts. Joe Williams was moving the ball pretty well on that drive. And they, on the last, you know, four plays or whatever, they just totally went away from him. Mm-hmm. And they had three timeouts. You could have.
Yeah.
At least, you know, gave it a shot with Joe Williams. But yeah, that Damari Simpkins play, I mean, you're trying to get creative in a situation where, you know, you just need to get those first downs or just mm-hmm. move the ball closer, you know, to the red zone and not get creative in that situation with trick plays and stuff. You just go to the basics and and just try to get that touchdown. But yeah, the play calling on that drive was not good. And then the clock management with the three timeouts, I just, you know, just boneheaded mistakes by the coaching staff.
Yeah. Looking at the plays, so we were at the Washington 30. I mean, we were moving right along. You know, we started at the Utah 36. We were moving right along. So we were at the Washington 30, first and 10. And we got a pass complete to Damari Simpkins for 4 yards. Second and 6. Is when we decided to break out the trick play. Damari Simpkins passed to Raylon Singleton. I believe that one was almost intercepted too. Third and 6, and this was a killer. The one sack of the game that the Utes offensive line gives up happens on second play or second to last play for the Utes. So we go from a 3rd and 6 to a 4th and 15. You know, and then obviously we had the Hail Mary play again right there. We had that timeout, you know, we could have ran the ball on 3rd and 6, gotten, you know, two to 5 yards there. That leaves you at a 4th and 1, you know, and I don't know, maybe you still don't get it, but a Hail Mary out of the back of the end zone is infuriating. We had 52 seconds left on the clock still. Yeah. You don't need to go for it, you know, for the end zone. Let's, you know, maybe do a hook and ladder play that we've had success with before in bowl games. You know, I mean, something different. Give your players a chance.
Yeah, I mean, go for the first down. Why, with all that time left on the clock, why take that shot?
Yeah.
Try to at least get the first down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I tweeted out with 1:30 left and 3 timeouts, they just totally went away from Joe Williams, and Joe Williams was moving the ball and just totally went away from the run game and went to a passing game who, you know, for a majority of the game just wasn't really working out for you. I mean, you had a couple good pass plays, but it just, yeah, it's just frustrating when, you know, the play calling and the time management just kind of gets away from the coaches.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's kind of some stats here. So now that we've kind of torn apart the Washington game statistics, so Washington averages 46 points a game. We held them to 31, 15 points below their average. they allow 15 points a game, and we scored 24, so 9 points above their average. Total yards, Washington averages 473 total yards. We held them to 385, so, you know, almost 100 yards below their average. Passing, 249, we held Browning to, I believe, 186. Rushing, they averaged 224. We held them to 199. So rushing, they almost got their average, but the passing, which, you know, kind of the big thing for Washington, we held them well below their average. You know, we had an interception, so we were plus one in the turnovers category. So, I mean, in all respect, I mean, Utah played a fairly good game for the most part. You know, the game plan, you know, keep possession and, you know, give your team a chance to have the ball and score points and don't let the Huskies score. You know, we held them below pretty much all of their averages, you know, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, the spread was, I believe, 11 points, and, you know, we only lost by 7. So I think if Utah is a little more healthy for this game, you know, we don't lose Sam Tevy, Marcus Williams is back, Corey Butler-Bird is back. I think if we have those guys, we give ourselves a lot better of an opportunity, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Utes, it was a great game overall, and the Utes, you know, showed that they can, even when they're not healthy and they're dinged up and they're missing key players, they can hang with, you know, the top five team in the country. And, you know, I definitely want to see a rematch there in the Pac-12 title game. I think the Utes, I know the Utes could be this Washington team if, you know, they can get some key players back. And, you know, I would love to see a Kyle Whittingham-led, you know, hungry Utah team for revenge against Washington and then the Pac-12 title team.
Yeah, game. Absolutely. Yeah, Pac-12 title game. I mean, that in Levi's Stadium, that could be a rematch of Washington versus Utah, and I would welcome that. You know, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think Utah, if we continue to get healthy and more healthy, will be even better and be able to give them a better fight. So, so moving right along, do you have anything else for us for Washington?
No, I think we pretty much covered it, and you know, it was a good game, and you know, we gotta get that rematch.
Absolutely. So real quick, let's get into our Ute Cues.
Now time for Ute Cues, where we take your questions from Twitter and email and we answer them weekly. Tweet us at Ute Talk Podcast or email utetalk@gmail.com.
Alrighty, so for those of you that do not know what our Ute Cues segment is, you can tweet your questions to our Twitter account at Ute Talk Podcast, or email us utetalk@gmail.com, and you can use the hashtag UteQs, so hashtag sign UTEQS, and ask your question. We'll do our best to answer it here on the show. You know, we'll find it out from the team. We'll do what we can to get that answer for you. We also will post some questions for you to answer. We'd love to have your feedback on these, so continue to do so. Our first question that we posted is, will Joe Williams rush for over 1,000 yards? Give us your grand total for him. So right now, I mean, Joe is having a heck of a return from retirement. I mean, the guy has just been off the charts. I mean, taking that 1 month break has really done well for him. So currently, right now, where he sits, he's at 120 attempts, 758 yards, 6 touchdowns, with an average of 6.3 yards a carry. And he's only really played, oh, how many games is that? 5 games now? So he's missed 4. So five of nine potential games. And that's just crazy to me. So our question again, will Joe Williams rush over 1,000 yards? At JD Haas, I'm sure he'll break 100 by end of the season. He's going to eat ASU and Oregon alive. He may be close to 1,400 after after Colorado. At MT Coleslaw, Oregon's run D is 117th of the country. He'll have a big game against them. At Ivy Ute Muir, I'd say conservatively, he should be around 1,200 yards barring injury before Pac championship or bowl game. And that's dependent on if Moss and McCormick come back and take some of the carries, take some of the load off, which actually might be a welcome for us at this moment. Because we do need Joe Williams healthy for the Pac-12. And that's what Ivy Ute says. I would not object to this. We need Joe Williams healthy for the Pac game and the bowl game, which is more important. At BGS3 or Triple I, yes, he will end up with about 1,150. And then at A Hills 101, without the Pac-12 championship game, he gets to 1,100 with the extra two games. I'm assuming the bowl game and the Pac-12 game. You're stating is 1,350 yards. So, you know, what do you think about our listeners there and their thoughts? Again, Joe Williams currently has 758 yards on the season. We've got three games left. We play two pretty poor defenses in Arizona State and Oregon. He really could have a heyday of, 150 plus yards in each game, which would be, phenomenal. And that would put him over the 1,000 mark. What are your thoughts on Joe Williams on that question?
Yeah. The beginning of the season, I thought Joe Williams would be another 1,000 yard back for the Utes just because I knew how talented he was and how good he was. And, he's showing that right now with the way he's playing. That's the way I expected him to play. I didn't expect him to come out and be so tentative and not just kind of go through the motions like he did the first two games. Mm-hmm. But the way he's playing right now is how I expected him to come out and play. He's a talented guy. NFL scouts are looking at him because of how well he's playing. He's got all the speed in the world, fastest Ute on the team. And he's showing that he can, shoulder the load there. I mean, he had 35 carries last game and I think he had, 30 plus in against UCLA. So definitely, taking on the load like Booker did. But I do believe he'll, be in the 1,200 range by season's end.
Yeah.
I just think I always thought he'd be 1,000 yard back just because outside of his fumbling issues, I just knew how talented he was. And I mean, that break that he took, did something to him because he's a different animal right now.
He is. He most absolutely is. He's completely different mentality. And I know Whittingham came out and said that is exactly what has changed with him is he's, his mentality towards the program, towards the game of football has changed entirely. And I actually was reading an article yesterday about Williams already being looked at by some scouts and that some would be willing to take a late round flyer on him if they feel that his head is where they want it to be to play in the NFL. If they feel that he's going to be a committed player, then he very well could get some looks and possibly get drafted, which to start the season, nobody would have thought that because he was having so many issues. Then obviously he retires, basically everything's out the window then. Then he comes back and just blows the doors right off these last three games. So hope he keeps it up like you. I think he gets probably, I'm thinking, with potential Pac-12 game and a bowl game, probably 1,200 to 1,300. If we do get the Pac-12 game and the bowl game, maybe 1,300 plus is what I'm thinking. So thank you on that question, guys. Our next question, with the remaining schedule, which team do you believe will give the Utes the toughest test? Now, again, remaining schedule is at Arizona State, home against Oregon, and at Colorado Buffaloes. At CCB 1212, Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. I like it. I like where your head's at. That would be a very, very good game, and that would be a very, very tough test. I agree. At JD Haas, no question, Colorado, the division champ, will probably be the team that wins the game. Definitely agree with that. That game in Buffalo is always, not necessarily the game in Buffalo, excuse me, the game versus Colorado, the Buffs. ever since we've been in the Pac-12, it's always been kind of a tight game. And Utah's season has been dependent on that game. This one is no different. And this one actually has, a little bit of a little bit more to it for both teams. so that'll be a tough game. At @S_Glaus18, Colorado for sure. They've always played Utah tough, and this year they are actually good. I agree. And then at Granny Hadfield, all of them. All will be close. Why different from the other nine games? And that's a very good statement, Granny Hadfield. I truly agree with that. I mean, as I've kind of looked at the schedule and, you look at Arizona State and Washington and, kind of what they've been able to do, these last couple of games, they've really started to come on strong. Oregon has started to find its footing under Justin Herbert, their quarterback, and that's great for them. Excuse me, keep losing my voice here. And then Arizona State, Arizona State has always given Utah a little bit of troubles here and there. I know how you fans feel about Todd Graham and his sign stealing, I guess you would say, but Arizona has won some, they've lost some. They played they played Washington tight, 31-24. They lost by 5 against Cal. They lost to Oregon. They lost by 5 against Washington State. And then they got beat. That was Utah. So the last 5 games for Arizona State, they lost to Oregon, lost to Washington State. They lost to Colorado and lost to USC. So they have quite a few losses on their record, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a terrible team. A lot of those games they've played tough until the final little bit. So it won't be an easy task for Utah. We can't come in there and think that we're just going to roll over these guys. And even more so for me, for Utah, home against Oregon, some of the players aren't there that we laid the lashing on last year, but Oregon's starting to come on strong. Herbert, like I said, is starting to look really good, and Oregon has the talent in almost every position. I hope that Utah doesn't overlook the Oregon game, because it's at home, looking towards the Colorado game. But, Oregon will be tough. So, like Granny Hadfield said, I think these next 3 will be tough. I think our toughest will be Colorado, because it's on the road. It's going to mean a lot more, because it's going to decide, the division. But what are your thoughts, Patrick? Sorry, I feel like I talked forever there.
No, you're good. I agree. I think Colorado is going to be the toughest game. For the Utes, for some reason, it's always a close game with Colorado every year. And this year, Colorado's a good team, and there's going to be a lot on the line. So it's, if Colorado can win out the rest of the games and the Utes can win out, that's going to be an incredible game, I think. It's going to be an exciting game, and whoever wins that will definitely win the South and go to the championship game. But, you know, if the other two games, I mean, Arizona State always plays the Utes tough. Oregon, you know, is Oregon. Who knows? They could come on strong against the Utes. The Pac-12 is such a crapshoot each week just because you never, you know, any team can beat any team on any given week.
Absolutely.
And I just know if the Utes can get healthy and get some key players back, and they can, and they don't do what the Utes typically do and play down to their competition, I think, you know, if they play to their full potential, get some key players back, you know, I think they can definitely beat Arizona State. They can definitely beat Oregon. And then that Colorado game is going to be tough, but I think that they can pull it out. And it's just, you know, Utes, you know, they hold their own destiny right now to win the South. And hopefully they don't have any November meltdowns like they usually do, and they can pull through. So this is an exciting time because this could really, you know, propel the Utes here, you know, winning the South, going to the championship game, and then, you know, if they could win that, they could go to the Rose Bowl and play, like they said, play Ohio State, and that would be an amazing game. Or mm-hmm. even if they played Michigan or whatnot, that would be awesome.
Yeah, any of those games would be phenomenal. Right now, a lot of the national pundits have Utah versus Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, and how that would work out is if Washington goes undefeated, Utah meets Washington in the Pac-12 game. Washington wins, goes to the playoff as the 4 seed. Utah would then be, you know, the Pac-12 runner-up, which would then put them into the Rose Bowl. If Utah were to win out and win the Pac-12 championship game, Utah would then, again, be the Rose Bowl recipient as well. So,
and how awesome that would that be to see, you know, a Whittingham team versus Urban. I mean, that would be incredible. I would definitely want to get tickets to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Luckily, they've got over 100,000 in that stadium. So I would think that a lot of Utah fans would fill that stadium pretty quickly. I for one, am planning on it. So should be a great end of the season here as we start kind of wrapping up. You know, the schedule. Very excited for these coming games. Luckily, we get a bye week now. You know, hopefully heal some of our guys that are kind of nicked and knocked around a little bit. You know, get them healthy and get their bodies back right. You know, we'll go into more detail on Arizona State on Monday next week.
Yeah, I think the bye week came a week too late. I think they could have used it last week, but yeah, at least it's here and they can get some guys that are dinged up healthy again and
for the final run,
get back to whatever, you know, kind of full strength they can for a run to the South title. So it's going to be an exciting, you know, next few weeks here for the Utes.
Absolutely. Well, that is it from us here at Ute Talk Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for giving us a listen. And again, you can follow us on Twitter at Ute Talk Podcast. From our audio engineer, Marty, Patrick, and myself, Andy, we will see you next time. And as always, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at Ute Talk Podcast or email at utetalk@gmail.com.